Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Misha Tate, and you're listening to Carson's Corner.
This is Duran, and you're listening to Carson's Corner. Make sure you stay tuned in.
This is Justin Ray Harvey, Frank Duke's student. You're listening to the best of the best shows on the web and beyond. Carson's Corner with Bob Carson.
This is Bo, the one-man army Taylor, media darling and Midwest champion of the world. You're listening to the only radio show that's hard-hitting, keeps it real, and does not pull punches. Carson's Corner.
This is the coach, Sean Tompkins, and you're listening to the best in mixed martial arts, Carson's Corner.
Okay, let's go. Yeah, g'day, this is Justin Lawrence calling from my backyard in Australia, mate. You're listening to Bob Carson, the finest investigative journalist in mixed martial arts history. Listen to his show, I love it.
Hey, this is Joey Odessa, and you're listening to me on the Bob Carson Show, the show that lets no words barred give a whole new perspective to no holds barred.
These days, it's not much fun at Bally's and Caesars in Atlantic City. The CEO is playing the corporate greed game, cutting dealers' hours, cutting retirement and health benefits, even breaking the law by refusing to bargain. Yet he paid himself $39 million last year, with plenty of perks.
Place your bet.
When Bally's and Caesars play games with casino dealers, it's not fun for anybody. And everybody loses. That's why the UAW Atlantic City Dealers Union paid for this time.
Welcome to another MMA edition of Carson's Corner here on Blog Talk Radio. My name is Bob Carson. It is Wednesday or Thursday evening, 8 p.m., January 28, 2016. I want to welcome the folks over at the Underground Forum. Thanks for listening to us. We really appreciate it. And today we have a bit of a different show, a show that we normally don't do. You know, since we've been doing podcasting since 2006, we've had a wide variety of personalities on this program. We've had a bunch of different people that are not necessarily MMA fighters from the world of combat sports. I mean, we've had, you heard the promo, the coach, Sean Tompkins, who passed away a few years ago, surprisingly, very suddenly, passed away at the age of 37. And Sean Tompkins was a great mixed martial arts coach, a great person by all accounts, and he was a super big fan of Carson's Corner. And, you know, we've had managers on, Monty Cox I've had on before. You know, we've had promoters on, state officials, Mark Ratner we've had on. Mark Ratner is really, really accessible. We were in communication with him last month or the month before about coming on the program. But today we're going to have something a little different here. We're going to have the CEO or founder of Street Beefs. And this is a very, very interesting organization that has caught the attention of major mainstream news outlets out there. And it's basically street fighting with gloves. You get guys, two guys that have some sort of beef, some sort of street beef, as is the name of the organization, and they put on gloves and they fight, and that's it. They settle it. According to some of the research that we've done, there doesn't seem to be any problem with it as far as local law enforcement. There does seem to be some sort of at least redeeming value for this organization, and you know, he's trying to rid the community in which he grew up in of crime, and trying to solve these disputes amicably. And, you know, it really is interesting, because if you look at this culture that we have now, I mean, ever since the rise of Kimbo Slice, and we can all remember, and I can remember years ago, this is probably 10 years ago, when Kimbo Slice was coming up, and Kimbo Slice was, you know, fighting Sean Gannon, the police officer / MMA fighter from Boston. And, you know, Sean Gannon had fought for Kip Kohler's reality fighting. He was a fairly decent local fighter. And he had that 10-minute just brawl with Kimbo Slice that was really widely viewed and really helped to launch Kimbo Slice's career. And I would say that really was a negative sort of a display of street fighting. You know, it Kimbo Slice and the way that his fights were portrayed, and you know, him punching somebody's eye out, and the injuries, and just the brutality, it didn't really seem to have any type of redeeming value to it. It was just more for everybody's entertainment, more for just kind of, you know, shock appeal and whatnot. And there is certainly a part of our society that enjoys watching it. I mean, you can't log on to a website without seeing one of these disturbing videos of a confrontation or a punch or you know, some sort of, even worse, some terrorist acts or some sort of acts from one of the cartels south of the border. It's so prevalent in our internet culture. But it seems that Scarface is trying to do something good with this organization. And I got to tell you, if you go on YouTube and you look at some of these videos, I mean, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of views. And it's definitely gotten the attention of a lot of people there. So we're going to bring him on the line. I believe he just called in about a minute ago. We also have UFC Fight Night that I may discuss later on if we have time, some interesting fights on this card, particularly the main event involving Anthony Johnson versus Ryan Bader. But without further ado, let's go to this evening's guest here. Let me just pull it up here. For some reason, my computer is a little... Okay, there we go. All right, and Scarface, welcome to Carson's Corner. Is this you?
Yes, it is, man. How you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling. Really appreciate it. I was just talking about street beefs, and we're very pleased to welcome you. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing great. I brought along one of our fighters, the Iraqi Assassin. He's sitting beside me just in case you wanted a fighter from our yard's perspective. But I just wanted to call in and answer any questions you guys may have.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Absolutely, we'd love to hear from him. That would be very, very good for our listeners, and we really appreciate that. First, I want to start to talk about how you acquired that name. I mean, I'm sure most of our listeners will know, of course, Tony Montana, the famous Scarface of our time. Is Scarface a Tony Montana inspired alias in your case, or do you literally have a scarred face?
No, I literally have a scarred face. You can see on one of my videos, I told the story. There was a house fire when I was a child. I tried to get my younger brother out of the house fire, and I was caught. I received third-degree burns over 60% of my body. I got a pretty severe scar on my face, and it was just kind of a nickname that the kids picked up when I was younger, and kind of carried me. I've carried it with me for years.
Yeah, because, you know, a scarred face is one of those things that probably seems bad to start off with, but then it inspires fear and respect when people know someone with a scarred face has been involved in some heavy stuff. So it definitely commands respect. And either way, street beefs is some realish some stuff. It really, really is. You can't really take that away from you guys. What is your official title? Are you the creator, president, CEO? How do you think of yourself?
I am the one who created it. And, you know, I'll start by saying that we didn't create it in the idea of being some kind of MMA organization. We created Street Beefs for guys from our neighborhood who had severe disputes with each other that may lead to prison or death, to give them an outlet to come and fight under unified MMA rules to settle their dispute as opposed to killing each other or street fighting.
Yeah, and I was definitely talking about that at the beginning of the show. There's definitely redeeming value in what you're doing as opposed to some of the other similarly natured stuff that we see online that I spoke about. Street Beefs may have a lot in common with sporting events. You mentioned the unified rules, but these beefs get settled in a different kind of arena, and that, of course, is the arena of the streets. Before we talk about the origin of the Street Beefs, let's give our listeners information about how they could check it out while listening to this interview, if they're at home or they can watch later. Can you spell out or give people the YouTube or link or website?
It's pretty simple. You just go on YouTube and type in Street, as in, you know, Street, S-T-R-E-E-T, Beefs, B-E-E-F-S. And it's that simple. You'll see the name of the YouTube channel is Street Beefs. It's actually Street Beefs Fights. And you'll see over 200 videos pull up pretty easily. If you type us in on YouTube, you will find us.
Now, folks, check out some of the action. I started watching, and like, as I said, many people watch these fights. I mean, some of these videos have over 100,000 views, if not more. Are there any fights you would say, Scarface, that the essence of Street Beefs is captured or people should check out? I mean, what is the, if any, definitive Street Beefs fight for you?
For me, the definitive Street Beefs fight, and it may not be as pretty as some of the other fights, but there's a fight called Chuck versus Herschel, and it's just two guys with regular names, and they had a really bad dispute with each other, and they got in there, and they solved it. They hugged it out afterwards and walked away. One other one that maybe is even a better representative, the guys have nicknamed it Animal versus Rampage Black. It's a pretty brutal fight, and it's not for the weak of heart. But these two guys had a race-related issue with each other. One of the guys was a skinhead. But they walked away with mutual. Before that, they were cutting each other's car tires, breaking out windows, threatening to kill each other. After they fought, they weren't best friends, but they left each other alone. They walked away with mutual respect, which is basically what we want out of this.
You know, I liken it back to when I was a kid, or when I was in middle school and high school, because I used to sometimes get into fights, and you know, it's sort of as you say, is when you conjure up the intensity to fight somebody, and you punch somebody in the face. I think regardless of the outcome, that sticks with people, and that sort of, I guess, gives people a person less of a reason to mess with you, because almost every single person that I've ever fought in my life, I've gotten them out of my life forever. So there is something to this notion that you know, fighting does solve things.
Yes, and you know, let me just say that we've never been of the attitude that this can solve any dispute out there. There's disputes that can be solved by talking. There's disputes that can be solved in other fashions. But there is some disputes between certain people that, you know, this is the way to go. And I'd say as long as nobody's dying and as long as nobody's being permanently injured, what is there to lose? It's worth a try, because I have, and if you look on my channel, you'll see I started this because a few of my friends were murdered out on the streets, and it was over petty disputes that if they could have even fought it out, as opposed to pulling a gun or a knife, they'd still be alive. So I see it as a better alternative than death.
Now, street beefs is basically street fighting, but with some precautions in place, and participants who want to fight rather than someone just attacking someone else can do so. Obviously, there was a lot of beef on the street before either of us were born. I mean, arguably, disputes between settlers and Native American tribes were the original street beef of their time. Were you someone who grew up around the streets and therefore also had beefs?
I was. I grew up in several. I moved a lot as a kid. I lived in Pittsburgh. I lived in Phoenix, and I lived in Cleveland. And I lived in some rough neighborhoods, and I can assure you, I've seen petty things turn to people dying. I've seen families destroyed over little disputes, and it's sad. And I've always just thought, man, there's got to be a better way to this. So, you know, my friend beside me, the Iraqi assassin, he came over here as a refugee, and he was bullied for his status. You know, people called him a terrorist, which is just ridiculous. And
right.
He ended up bringing a dispute to the yard. And believe it or not, some of those guys that had disrespected him showed him respect after he got in there and fought him. I mean, it's hard to believe, but it's a fact.
You know, a beef can occur on potentially any street because that's human nature. I mean, I live right now. I'm staying with relatives in a fairly, a very, very wealthy community and block. And believe it or not, not surprisingly, there was a street beef involving my relatives and some neighbors. So, I mean, you know, this happens. Despite economic class, it happens in all income brackets, so forth. But you know, what we've seen in documentaries and historical records is that this is human nature. It's just human nature, and it's also animal nature. I mean, animals can't consent to settling beefs in any organized way with rudimentary rules, and that's what makes street beefs for humans. What was it in your own experience and background that made you want to take the everyday beefs to happen on streets and then document them and even broadcast them? Was it just, as you said, just growing up and seeing how these beefs can ultimately lead to people being shot and killed?
That was part of it. As I said, I had a few friends in the last 8 years who were murdered in street disputes, so that definitely impacted me. But also, I had incidents when I was younger where somebody may be threatening or trying to fight me or whatever, and, you know, it drug and hung out for several months, and it caused a lot of stress in my life, and I would have given anything back then to be able to bring them to some kind of organized setting and fight them. Last but not least, I had a boxing coach when I was young, and his policy was if we had somebody throughout the week that we had a dispute with, on Saturdays we could bring them in to the boxing ring if they agreed and box them as long as we had both agreed to shake hands and walk away afterwards. So that also influenced me and gave me this idea.
What was the very first street beef fight to be recorded, and how did it come about?
So the very first street beef fight was a fight between a guy we called Kaiser Sosa and the same guy, Rampage Black. What it happened over was there was a drug deal of some sort. One of them was arrested, and I won't go into details because they asked me not to. I'll just say that accusations were made that one of them was an informant. The other one denied that. And it could have got bad. It really could have went to another level, but they both agreed to come over and get their frustration out in this way. And to my knowledge, they never had any more trouble after that.
Wow, that's pretty remarkable. And you've been doing this for at least 5 years, am I right?
Almost six.
Okay. Did you set out to make it an entertainment property, or did it evolve into that over time?
it kind of evolved into that. And believe it or not, I've had some people say, well, you're doing this out of the kindness of your heart. Why film it? And believe it or not, the fact that this is going to be on YouTube actually motivates some of these people with beefs to come to the yard because they want other people to know that they came like a man and put their dukes up. So they want other people to see that they solved their dispute with this guy and wasn't afraid. So the camera thing wasn't just motivated by me or any of my people. In fact, one of the first beefs we had, they asked if the fight could be put on YouTube.
Now, some people may be critical of any product that shows raw human combat the way Street Beef does, but intellectually honest people know that this sort of stuff has been going down all day, every day, all over the world for literally thousands of years, and pointing a camera at it doesn't create the problem or make it worse automatically, as I was saying at the beginning of the show. In fact, it's probably safer for you to fight in the Street Beefs than a disorganized fight. At least you get to determine who's fighting you, and if they want to fight, and they fight without weapons and stop one person who is beating another person decisively. I mean, all you have to do is turn on the news to see what a violent society seemingly we've become. And I know that you emphasize safety for competitors more than the average street fighting video enterprise. I thought we would talk a little bit about that in more detail down the line. But how much did that figure into the concept of Street Beefs, the ability to provide some sort of rules in order to, for these conflicts to be, solved reduced safely?
That was everything. The ability for us to provide them safety that they wouldn't see on the streets was the whole motivating factor. We had a friend about 6 years ago who got in a street fight, and a guy stabbed him in the leg. Well, you wouldn't think much of a stab in the leg, except that it hit his femoral artery. He bled to death within 10 minutes. And he didn't go to that fight thinking that he was going to die. And that's what I try to stress to these young guys is, if you choose to fight out in the streets, anything can happen. In our yard, we can pretty much guarantee you that the worst outcome is going to be maybe a broken nose or you get KO'd, but you will walk away alive.
Now, that's almost like
the role.
Yeah, I mean, that's almost like the role of the United Nations or NATO, who may allow a conflict to play out, but they try to enforce rules from the outside relating to the treatment of civilians, use of chemical weapons, and so on and so forth. Is Street Beefs the UN of street fighting?
I would say it's, I guess, I don't want to put that title on myself, but I will say that here in this city, we try to be. And that's a good way to frame it.
Yeah. I mean, it's not an exaggeration to say that Street Beefs is being viewed globally. You know, when you started out, was that your goal, or did this just grow from something with more humble origins into the international entity it is today?
Yeah, we just had wanted the people in the city to see it. We had no idea that it would get to this level. We've got one video that has 10 million views. We didn't anticipate this, but we're happy because at the very least, maybe this will. We want the culture of guys thinking that it's cool to shoot somebody. We want that culture to go away. We want it to be seen as cowardly to pull a gun in a street fight. We want instead it to be seen manly to put your dukes up. So we're hoping to maybe affect the culture a little bit.
Can you go over the rules governing Street Beefs for the people at home who may not know them? I mean, you basically have a referee to stop the action when one person submits or can't continue, gloves at least some of the time, and what else?
So, again, like I mentioned, it was the unified MMA rules. So I'll start by saying pretty much anything you see in the UFC you can do in our yard. There's no knees to a grounded opponent, no biting, no throat chops, no groin attacks of any sort. One thing that we do that is different, because none of these fighters are tested for diseases, if we see blood, we will immediately stop the fight and try to get the bleeding stopped. if we can't get the bleeding stopped, we'll talk to both fighters and see if they want to continue. If one is not comfortable continuing, then the fight stops. We don't allow anybody to wear boots. We do allow light tennis shoes in the fights. We don't allow children now. In the beginning, we did allow certain adults to bring their children, but then we got a lot of flack about that. I still stand by that decision because children watch the UFC and watch WWF. I don't understand why our fights are different, but to keep everybody happy, I outlawed children coming anymore. Other than that, it's pretty much there's nothing real different about our rules. The one thing, because our fights are shorter, if it goes to the ground, we make them stay active. If they're not active, we stand them back up.
So are gloves optional?
No, absolutely not. Gloves are required 100%.
Okay. And that's it. Basically, are there any other rules flexible in the sense of me? Could I agree to fight a Kung Fu guy with eye gouging and groin strikes and maybe weird Kung Fu gloves, or are those, you know, that's pretty much banned?
No, sir. If our rules that I just named are non-negotiable, the only rules that we allow the fighters to negotiate is, will there be grappling or no grappling? Will we allow kicks, etc.? The other rules that were built in for safety's sake, they're not negotiable.
Some people might say that the notion of rules plays against the spirit of a true street beef in which only a person's conscious and will enforce a rule of conduct, and life can only be nasty, brutish, and short, in the words of those of Thomas Hobbes. How do you make your case for the fact that street beefs is governed by some semblance of rules and structure?
Well, I would say that if we were to take on that attitude, then we might as well just let them fight in the street. The whole purpose for street beefs is to try to make it as close to a street fight, but a street fight that won't get anybody killed. So, and there's certain techniques and certain moves in a fight that are more deadly than others. So we have to enforce some rules. If we're going to say, well, to keep the spirit of a street fight alive, we're not going to enforce rules, well, then we might as well just let them fight at the local corner store. So that's kind of what we're trying to walk, a fine line to keep it realistic, yet not let anybody die.
Yeah, I agree. It definitely does. I mean, it definitely removes some of the chaos, unpredictability, and danger of the streets. But is it possible to do that without also losing the soul of the street fight as well?
I don't know that it's totally possible. And you may. A street fight is sporadic. A lot of times street fights happen spontaneously. Two guys who 1 minute weren't expecting to see each other may bump into each other, and it just happens. This is totally different than that. It is scheduled. The two guys know for several weeks that they're going to be fighting each other. So you do, in a sense, lose some of the spirit of the street fight. But I'd like to think that whatever we lose, you know, in that spirit, we gain by trying to keep these guys alive and keep them out of jail.
Even though you do enforce rules, do you have any concerns about the fact that the street can never truly be tamed? And obviously, there's still potential for people to get seriously injured or hurt?
I do. I, you know, as far as we go, there's always a chance that something could go wrong, a punch could be landed the wrong way, and somebody could get hurt. And then on the flip side of that, out in the streets, there's people who still refuse to come to us to settle their disputes, and those type of people with that mindset we may never reach, unfortunately.
Even though, I mean, what type of injuries have you had, Derek? I mean, how badly hurt would you say the average person who participates ends up?
Most people, believe it or not, because a lot of these guys aren't highly trained, the worst you're going to see is a black eye, busted lip. Now, I myself broke my hand 3 different times in the yard. I know one guy had a broken leg in the yard, and we've had a couple broken jaws. So I would step out there and say the worst injury was the broken leg, which is bad, but guess what? We play backyard football. The Iraqi assassin who sat right beside me, he's seen three different people carried off the football field with broken legs. So you can get injured like that in lots of different sports. It's not just fighting.
Were there any moments where you saw someone get hurt and went down and you thought, oh, maybe this was a bad idea, you had second thoughts?
No, I can honestly say no. Because I sat down and talked with all of these guys before they ever hit the ring, and I make sure that they clearly understand the risk. And these are all adults, you know. We don't mislead anybody into this to think that it's safe and that it's going to be a bunch of fun, you know. So I don't. I've never felt that way. That's not to say I never would, but right now I feel that we're doing the right thing.
Yeah, and of course, we've seen thousands of internet fights with no precautions at all, no gloves, no referees, sometimes one person just beating up another person who didn't even want to fight. I mean, this happens all the time. So I think in fairness, even if there are people who criticize street beefs and the people behind it, we have to recognize the fact that it definitely is safer than just throwing down randomly on the street. Whether or not it's safe enough for any person in particular is something everyone has to decide for themselves. I also want to say that the main referee for Street Peeps has received high praise for his timely stoppages and ability to keep fights under control. Can you tell us anything about the referee for Street Peeps?
Yeah, we actually have two separate referees. Both of them actually have done a lot of research on how to safely monitor a fight. They didn't just hop into this head first. They took it seriously, and their job, they understand that their job first and foremost is to make sure that nobody gets severely hurt. So they go in with that attitude. They keep a lookout for glazed over eyes. They keep a lookout for somebody who's not properly defending themselves. And I got to tell you, I'm very impressed, especially with our referee, Wes Craven. He's a good friend of mine. He does an incredible job of protecting the fighters.
What's his background? I mean, what is it that enables him to have done such a good job?
You know, he's just like me. He's been around fighting a lot in his life. When I boxed as a kid, he went to all of my boxing matches, and he got to see a little bit about how it was done and how it was regulated. And I don't know. I guess he's just a natural with knowing how to take care of the fighters.
You must still worry, though, Scarface, about the potential legal consequences. I mean, do you have any concerns or thoughts about the authorities trying to encroach on what you're doing or any other legal potential consequences?
I didn't up until this last month when we started getting all this attention, because for now what we do is 100% legal. In our city, what I'm doing is legal. But I have become a little bit concerned because we're getting a lot of attention now on the national level, and who knows when the local authorities may decide that they do want to try to somehow shut us down. But I do have a bit of feeling of righteousness that I know my heart's in the right place, and whatever will be, will be. So,
yeah, every state seems to have different laws and different ways to apply them. How much research have you done into the legal status of street peeps? I mean, you mentioned it, it was legal, or it is legal, and is I guess in that sense, then, as long as it's on your property, what is it that, in other words, what is it that makes it legal in your state?
What makes it legal is that it's basically no different than a backyard game of football, because it's on private property between two consenting adults, and rules are being enforced. It's not, by definition, it's not a street fight. It's more of a sporting event on a, I guess, a private level. So, and the fact that I'm not charging any money, I don't charge anybody money on any level, that also makes it legal. If I started charging money for entrance, then it would be a problem.
Yeah, this sounds like, as far as the legal ramifications, this sounds like it could be one of those stories where you find out someone got busted for doing something online, then it turns out their dad is a lawyer and they think they should walk free on a technicality. I mean, I support the majority of those stories as long as nobody got hurt badly. Kidding aside, though, I want to acknowledge the fact that people are always going to fight. Again, they're often going to fight on the street or in the public or in semi-public locations, and that at least fighting with the referee and some safety precautions affords a level of safety greater than what would happen in unregulated street brawls. In some ways, is this sort of a public service? Because, you know, when Dada 5000, who I'm sure you're very familiar with, who's fighting next month in Bellator, fighting Kimbo Slice, had backyard matches, brawl-type matches, but he charged money. But he also, did it under the auspices of he's getting people away from the harsh realities that they face in the streets, and he's giving them something to do, and he's paying his participants. He viewed it as sort of a public service of what he's doing. Do you view it in the same light?
I want to say, first of all, I respect what Dada 5000 has done, and he and Kimbo made something out of nothing. I take exception to people comparing our fights to theirs because, although I do agree where he says he's providing an outlet and getting people off the street, our fights are totally different than his. Our fights started out with people coming to solve disputes. His fights are totally 100% for sport. So, I do feel there's a difference there. However, I admire the fact that he's trying to give young men a way out and give himself a way out. But I don't think that we're the same type of organization.
Yeah, I could see what you're saying there. To what extent do people come to you with the beef they want to set? I mean, do you have to seek people out? How do you locate people who want to participate?
Well, it started out that we were, on some level, seeking people out, but over the last few years, we've gotten a lot more popular, and our name has gotten out there a lot more. So now, oftentimes, people seek us out and ask if they can come solve their beef.
So you have people coming from – go ahead.
Yeah, we have people coming from the next state over in West Virginia to solve beef. So it's and now I actually have gotten calls from people in South Carolina over the last month. It's growing, definitely.
We've spoken about the fact that street beefs is now being viewed globally, but what sort of plans do you have in the future? I mean, I imagine your intent is to keep growing, and my understanding is you have a big season plan for 2016.
I do. I think 2016 is going to be huge. We just plan to keep on keeping on and just see where things go. The number one goal is and will always be to solve disputes above all else, above, commercializing anything. We just want to help people solve disputes without dying. So that's our first goal.
How many individual fights are you planning to release, or has that been determined yet?
We never know that. Each year it just kind of – but I kind of start to get an idea around this time, and I have a feeling 2016 is going to have a lot of fights.
Now, are these arranged into cards, multiple fights, or is each fight a one-off? How does that work?
I'm sorry. Could you repeat that question? I didn't understand it.
Sure. Are these fights arranged into cards of multiple fights, or is it just a fight of one on each video?
Usually what I know, each fight is uploaded individually, but they'll be uploaded like in spurts where I'll upload five or six fights on a weekend, usually every Saturday.
And you have this sort of video content which gets a lot of links and traffic from other sites, as well as being passed around on social media. I mean, Street Beefs is in some ways a viral product by design, correct?
Sure. Yeah, I would have to agree. Yes.
You've had links on the Underground Forum, the UG's Facebook page, which is where we found out about you. And I know that YouTube and other sites have started to reward content creators with a share of advertising revenue. Is that something you're taking advantage of?
Yeah, well, I mean, right now the most I've ever made in a month is like $900, which,
uh-huh.
you know, that's I guess not bad, but it's certainly not me getting rich off of this. So, and I don't, at the rate it's going, I don't foresee me becoming a YouTube millionaire. I think if I was to make money, it would be from other options. So, but that's fine. YouTube has still been great. I can't criticize them, you know, but it's just not the way I'm making my money.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Will you have to branch out into other areas in order to see larger returns? And which other areas would you be considering?
We have been offered a reality show. I've been offered a book deal. There's offers on the table, but I'm just trying to consider my options. And I'm trying to do what's best for Street Beefs as a whole. I don't want to make a move that's going to, you know, kind of disassemble what we're trying to do.
Is there any chance that Street Beefs could become too big for the street?
No, we won't let that happen. One way or another, I will make sure that this still appeals to the lowest person on the street, no matter who it is, above all else.
And what about, we mentioned this before, but what about the unwanted attention from Smokey, a.k.a. Johnny Law? If you get too big, could your profile draw too much attention and cause you to end up being threatened by, you know, a DA or with an axe to grind against viral videos or whatnot?
You know, I definitely think about that on a regular basis, and it's always a possibility, and I've just kind of taken on the attitude that I'll cross that bridge when it comes.
But do you take any precautions in order to get or to avoid being shut down or arrested by the cops?
Just we're respectful of my neighbors. Again, we emphasize fighter safety. That's one of the reasons we enacted the no children rule. That way, nobody can take exception to that. So those are the steps we take. We try to think about what they may not like and go ahead and address that before they address it.
You know, Scarface, people like myself, I had a background in MMA. I had fought in unregulated shoot fighting matches, and I fought one professional MMA match. And I bet people out there listening are wondering about how they would get involved with Street Beefs. Is this a case where people can express interest and become involved as a fighter or no?
Yeah, we do also accept guys who just like Day-Day 5000 and them, who just want to kill time, or who just want to blow off steam, or you know, just want to fight for sport. We accept them as well. So if they wanted to contact me, a lot of times people message me on YouTube or Facebook, and we just take it from there.
Yeah, I could even see myself fighting in Street Beefs, or maybe perhaps doing post-fight interviews or something like that, because I definitely support what you're doing, and I definitely have some sort of desire to get back to fighting. I think I may be able to do pretty well in Street Beefs. I don't know, though. You know,
we'd love to have you, brother.
Yeah. I mean, it's really something that I definitely want to do. I mean, I really do. So we'd like to talk to your fighter now, the Iraqi assassin. Just want to get some of his background, and if you want to put him on and have him tell us about himself, that'd be great.
Sure. Okay. Here he is, man.
Hello. How you doing?
Hey, how are you, my friend? How are you?
Good, good. Doing well. How about yourself?
Good. So Scarface told us a little bit about yourself. You are called the Iraqi Assassin?
Correct.
Now, what? Tell us your story. How did you come to get involved with street beefs?
Well, like he mentioned earlier, high school, you know, I didn't have the biggest – I wasn't the guy that was always famous, you know. So with my background, being from Iraq, people didn't like who I am. I live in a very civil but also country area, I guess. People take it that way, that I'm from Middle East. I'm a terrorist. And it kind of grew with me. I was the kind of guy that didn't want to get in trouble at school, saw an opportunity of education, better life, you know, in comparison to where I'm, when I'm from. So I've heard about street beefs, and you know, my friend took me there, and I talked to Scarface. The first time I saw him, I was like, man, I got this fight going on, and this guy's told me this name. We ended up getting the yard, you know, fight it out. The guy ended up losing, and I wanted to fight, and kind of all that racism kind of, you know, disappeared from there.
Wow. And was that how many fights have you had in street beefs?
I've probably had around maybe 20 to 25, around that number.
Oh wow!
Yeah, I've gotten so addicted to it in a good way, because it was also, because I'm an athlete myself. You know, I exercise very on a daily basis. You know, and so street beef was one of the sports that I guess fighting was one of the sports I enjoyed every Sunday. I played rugby, I played football, I played soccer. And so, fighting was something that I wanted to do eventually, but the backyard was right there. And, you know, it was there when I had a problem, it was there when I wanted to fight, and so, for fun.
Well, that's awesome. I mean, 20, 25 fights, I mean, that's pretty remarkable. Now, how many of these fights actually involved racism coming at you due to you being a Muslim?
Well, I want to say around two. It wasn't always like racism. It was always something else that came up, you know. And but mainly the first, I guess, around that, the first fight I had in street beef was definitely because I was a Muslim. And I was an Arabic, you know, an Arab man. And
right.
The second one was because of you know, being from Iraq, and you know, not more of being a Muslim, just being from that area.
Have you noticed, because it seems like this country, you know, I don't know if you follow politics or not, but it seems like we've become very, very reactionary and almost nativist when it comes to us being attacked by anyone that's not a white, you know, Christian American. And, you know, recently had the attacks in San Bernardino, and we've had other attacks, and there seems to be really a lot of anti-Muslim sentiment out there. Have you felt that? Have you felt any really escalation of these feelings toward yourself or toward your family, or has it just kind of been the same since you left high school?
Not a lot in this town. A lot of people know who I am here. You know, a lot of Middle Eastern people here. Is a very big community growing. Harrisonburg people, the majority of them seem to understand that, you know, they're very cool. You know, they seem to understand that not every Muslim or Middle Eastern that's, you know, is going to end up shooting a, you know, neighborhood or whatever, you know. But there is that one or two, or, you know, the group of people that think they, hey, you know, he's a Muslim, she's a Muslim, you better be careful, you know. And, you know, I don't blame them. Like, there's a lot of people, you know, a lot of people that do the shooting, giving Islam a bad name.
Right.
One thing I got to say, to defend Islam or the Middle Easterns or myself, you know, these people are not Muslim. Once they committed something like this, they exited, you know, Islamic religion. And no way, if you go back to the books of Islam or you know, to the books of the Quran or whatever, no way it encouraged a person to shoot somebody for no reason, you know.
Right.
It only encourages, it gives you the right of self-defense, and I think that's pretty universal, you know.
So what's your next step? I mean, you fought in a bunch of times in street beefs. Do you just plan on fighting, continuing to fight as a way? Because it sounds like it's therapeutic for you. Do you have any aspirations to perhaps become a professional fighter. You sound, I don't know how old you are, but you sound like a relatively young guy. What do you plan on doing in the future?
I feel like I'm already at a great place in my life right now. I'm only 21 years old. I speak two languages. I got a full high school education from America, from the United States of America. So a lot of people don't have that, don't have that opportunity. So I'm definitely appreciative to what I got. I always wanted to be a professional athlete. And no matter what, what window. I wanted to be a professional. Whether it's football, rugby, soccer, fighting, it don't matter. I love to be trained by someone who's professional and then go on to the next level and fight. That would be great, I actually have an uncle. He died a long time ago in the Iran war with Iraq. I've seen a picture of him. My aunt showed me a picture of him when Muhammad Ali had visited Kuwait, and he was in the same ring with Muhammad Ali boxing.
That's awesome.
And so I have that picture at home in Iraq. So this is this is the family roots that I'm coming from, a very athletic family.
Well, it's very, very inspiring to hear your story and to see that you're doing well. It really is. It's inspiring, the unconventional way in which you're doing it. Talking, of course, about the street beefs involvement is inspiring in itself. And I'm glad that it's helped you in your life, and I'm sure that that's like that for almost everybody that participates in it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, not a lot of people live an unconventional life to begin with,
Right.
It's definitely a great window to come to solve a dispute that you have with whoever might be, whether you're a male or a female, and solve it legally, solve it in a very safe manner. And then, after that, you'll have that mutual respect. Now, I know I walk downtown Harrisonburg, and I always see that one person hawks at me or at the mall, like, hey, I do the racket, and, they stop by and say hi. That's because they know
That's
what
cool.
I'm doing is right, And I don't encourage violence because I come from a very violent area. I lived through the war. My dad and my sister, my dad was shot 9 times in Iraq. My sister is 3 years younger than me. The year 2006, I'm only 21 right now. So the year 2006, she was shot 3 times in her knee, And you can, I guess, do the math and see how old she is. So I definitely tasted what, violent is firsthand. And so when I come here and
amazing.
I see a person, right, yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I said, when I come here and see a person who's being very racist to me, who doesn't know what I've gone through, and I don't think it's fair, and I can't talk to them because talking doesn't give them justice or peace, whatever. They want to fight. And so I don't want to ruin the chance of getting kicked out of high school because this is a better opportunity for me coming from a place of war. So this is where my story began with street beefs. This is where I came to the yard and fought it out. I didn't get in trouble. I didn't get suspended. I went back to school next morning. I graduated. It was all good to go.
Now, when did you come to the United States?
I moved here in the year 2009. January 27th is the first day I stepped a foot in the United States of America.
And so when your father was shot, when your sister was shot, that was, of course, during the U.S. and Iraq war.
Right. It's 3 years after the invasion. It's around the 2006, the end of 2006, and the beginning of 2007, we had moved from the most southern province in Iraq, Basra, to live in Syria because, honestly, there wasn't any opportunities of surviving in that land anymore. So.
And what was it like? I mean, I can't imagine what it was like, but you being very young, you probably don't have a lot of memory, or maybe you do, of what it was like under Saddam Hussein. Do you think that Iraq now is better or worse than it was before?
I don't know, honestly. Saddam had to go. That's where I stand at.
Right.
Saddam had to go. But the amount of people that died and left the country, definitely, I've done Saddam's amount of people that he killed. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And so everything happens for a reason, the way I look at it. It's definitely not as great as it used to be anymore. You know, Baghdad is a very historic city. You know,
right.
one of the most historic cities, one of the most educated cities in the world at the time. For me to see it like that, it definitely breaks my heart, but it is what it is, you know?
Well, it's, yeah, it's most people, I would say almost all people in the United States never would have had to have gone what you've gone through. And it's good to see that you have a very, very good attitude, seemingly, and you're very, very ambitious, and you don't have a lot of negativity towards us or towards this country, you know, because sometimes in foreign lands you see what we call blowback because of our actions and because of our presence in some Muslim countries. That plus, you know, poverty and all that stuff breeds extremism. It breeds, you know, what we see sometimes from extremist groups, and that those are the exceptions to the rules, but you know, it does happen, and it's really, like I said, it's inspiring to hear your story.
Right.
Is there any website or any Facebook page or anything that you want to give out to the listeners out there?
Right, yes. You can follow me on Facebook, on YouTube. I have a YouTube channel. It's called The Iraqi Assassin. It's pretty simple, Iraqi Assassin. You can go hit the subscribe button there, and you can, you know, watch my fight videos. I upload different angles of the fights that we host at Street Beef. So it's such like a second camera. Also upload my personal fights, workout devices. I work out a lot, quite a lot. Like I said, you can go on Facebook and look up the Iraqi Assassin. You can look up the page. And just one thing I wanted to mention too, you know, you were talking about the extremists out there and, making Islam looking bad. One way that I wanted to step out and prove that not all Middle Easterners are bad. You know, not all Muslims
right.
are bad. I personally went out my hand, you know, my way to go and finish high school again, get an education. Then I went on and enlisted in the Marine Corps. You know, and I'm suited to ship out here soon to become a Marine. So that's a challenge I took across myself to make Islam or Middle East look better than what it is now. Not a lot of people that are Muslim and, you know, and Arabic people are bad. And I just wanted to point that out, you know.
Oh, yeah. I'm just on your Facebook page now, and I'm sort of seeing this now. I'm sort of get a feel for what you've got going on. I do see you posted in an effort to help a soldier suffering from PTSD,
right.
or PTSD,
right.
and that's very admirable. I liked your Facebook page. I encourage everyone to visit the Iraqi Assassin Facebook page. I'm actually going to post a link right now to this interview. When do you do the ship out?
We're probably looking around mid-February, March. I just really haven't been on constant contact with my recruiter lately because of family. You know, I had a family member pass away in Iraq, so we're trying to, you know, get that closed out. So the last time I talked to him, which is about a week and a half ago, he said that, you know, hopefully around March or mid-February, we'll ship out to Paris Island.
Oh, wow. Well, good luck, my friend. Go ahead.
And that soldier on there, like I meant, you know, you said that needed help with getting a dog. You know, I love, you know, he's my my recruiter's best friend. My recruiter actually helped him out to enlist in the military. And you know, seeing my recruiter being upset because his friend is going through a hard time kind of made me upset too. And so I love all the people that can help him. I appreciate it, you know.
Well, we'll spread it around too. I'll try to share it on my Facebook page, and like I said, I encourage people to like your Facebook page at the Iraqi Assassin. I'm pleased to have met you, and I thank you very much.
Likewise, definitely. Thank you.
Hey, my friend, I don't know if you're done with the interview here. This is Face. Did you want us to just hang up, or what are we wrapping
no,
it up?
Yeah, let's just give people, just remind people where they can subscribe to you on YouTube and where they could follow Street Beefs on social media.
Okay. Again, you can join the Street Beefs closed group on Facebook. Just send a join request, and I will accept. Again, it's not the Street Beefs community page. That's no longer active. It's the Street Beefs closed group. Also, you can follow us on YouTube. Just type in Street Beefs, and it will pull up, and you'll see that we have over 200 videos under the name Street Beefs Fights. And thanks,
well,
everyone.
Scarface, I thank you again. I'm glad to meet you, and I hope to have some sort of a relationship with you guys, whether it's just having you on to promote any one of your events, your shows, or whether it's to become more involved with Street Beefs in any way or something going forward, because I think that it would be good. I think what you're doing is good. And I think that hearing stories like the Iraqi assassin, I'm sure there's a lot of other stories there, sort of makes it worthwhile, and maybe would open people's minds up about what you're doing if they heard similar stories, and especially the one that we just heard from our friend. So thank you very much for what you do, and like I said, I hope to speak to you very soon.
That's the last question. Is this airing live or will it air later? I'm sorry to ask on air.
No, that's okay. We're live now, and it's going to be on podcast. It's going to be in archived form. So once we're done, once the show is over at 9:30, it'll be available for everybody to listen to in archived form. And if you want, I could send you the archive link as well.
That would be great. Thank you so much. It was great talking to you. And we have an open line to you anytime. You feel free to contact me, and I will be glad to come back on.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Take care, my friend.
You too. Bye-bye.
Many questions we have as we grow. It's hard to find answers to what we don't know. But sometimes there's someone to whom we can turn to teach us life's lessons, help us to learn just what's important and what matters most, much more than our teacher, and we call them coach. Right there to guide us when we need a hand. They reach deep inside us and help us to stand, to lead by example in words and in deeds, and show us the courage we need to succeed. And I stand before you, I'm proud to boast, I'm one of the many who's learned from the coast. To never surrender your hopes or your wisdom, courage, and kindness is how you measure a soul. that you travel, the choices you make, the load that you carry, the chances you take. We raise our glasses and offer this toast to one who will always be known as the coach, to one who will always be known.
what a great song that is by Stan Bush. Great song. Yeah, thank you very much for bringing us back here on Carson's Corner. We've got about 15 minutes left here, and a big thanks to Scarface and the Iraqi Assassin. I seriously want to reach out to them. I want to continue to have a relationship with them, and I wouldn't mind doing a street beefs fight. You know, but it wouldn't be like I have a beef with anybody else. It's more like a beef with myself. You know, it's more just to get out there and just to fight somebody, you know, just to not be afraid and just try to throw punches and try to knock somebody out, and that's it, you know. It's more or less to try to redeem myself from, you know, my earlier attempts at fighting in a regular fashion. So don't be surprised. You know, I really would like to work with them if at all possible. So we'll see. I'll keep you posted. I'm not that far from Pennsylvania. It's not going to be that far of a drive for me. So, yeah, and who cannot be inspired by the story of the Iraqi assassin? I mean, that really is a very, very inspiring story. I don't care what your opinion is on street beefs or any of the issues that we discussed, the Iraq war, the Muslim terrorist attacks, the anti-Muslim sentiment. You would have to agree that it is really an inspiring story. And I encourage you to like his Facebook page at the Iraqi Assassin, facebook.com/Iraqi Assassin. I encourage you to subscribe to Street Beefs and promote the public service that they're doing. It really is a public service if you think about it, okay? All right, we've got UFC Fight Night coming up this Saturday, and I'm actually going to be able to see this. I think I'm going to be able to watch this. I'm not sure what time it starts, but it's going to be on Fox Sports 1, of course. Actually, and it's going to be in New Jersey, and it's going to be obviously my neck of the woods. I don't think I'll be able to attend this, but there's just some interesting fights on this card that really could have implications in their respective divisions. And probably the most important fight that I see on this card is Anthony Johnson versus Ryan Bader. Now, Ryan Bader came out and said Anthony Johnson is a quitter. He said that he'll be able to wear Anthony Johnson down and beat him. And, you know, this is probably going to take place most likely in the second round or third round. This fight is, I believe, a main event fight, of course. So it's going to be five rounds. And you'd have to give the advantage to Bader, because Bader is most likely going to be the better conditioned athlete if you're looking at their past performances. Ryan Bader really doesn't gas out. If anything, he's been susceptible to a one-punch knockout in some of his past losses, or just a momentary lapse of focus. You know, when he fought Tito Ortiz, he gets choked out by a 57-year-old Tito Ortiz, who, by the way, is thinking about coming back against Fedor. When is he going to hang it up? You know, it's like now you've got everybody talking about coming back. What is it now about the sport that you have? And it's not just MMA. I mean, there are boxers that still fight. I mean, James Toney, Roberto Duran has fought not too long ago. You know, it's not just MMA. It's just sports. It's just individual combat sports, because you don't hear of a 50-year-old NFL player coming back, because the team, there's tryouts, there's an official process for returning to action in these sports. You don't hear about a Major League Baseball player who's passed the hill. Once you're past the hill, once you're no longer usable by the team, you're done. That's it. You better hope that you've made enough money to live, and you better concentrate on making money, which is why you see a lot of these football players and a lot of these baseball players, they become commentators, they become announcers, they become this and that. It's just the unfortunate realities of the marketplace. But going back to this fight, I would have to pick Ryan Bader. Nobody's picking Ryan Bader for this fight. Everybody's thinking that Anthony Johnson is going to knock him out. And in a way, I hope that Anthony Johnson does win, because once you get John Jones that comes back, John Jones is you know, most likely going to fight sometime in the middle of the year, and he's going to be fighting Daniel Cormier. That's a fight that John Jones is expected to win. Then what are you going to have for John Jones in that division? You're not going to have anything, really. You know, maybe a fight with Gustafson, but Gustafson lost to Anthony Johnson, and Gustafson lost to Daniel Cormier, so I don't really see anything that necessitates that rematch. But on the other hand, if Johnson beats Ryan Bader, that's a matchup that John Jones hasn't fought, and that's a matchup because of Anthony Johnson's punching power that would lead some people to say that there's a slight possibility that John Jones would lose that fight. He would be the favorite, even though most likely he would win that fight. It's still a fight that the fans would want to see, as opposed to anybody else in the really weak 205-pound light heavyweight division in the UFC. Now, of course, you've got Luke Rockhold. Who knows what's going to happen with Luke Rockhold? I don't think anybody I don't want to say that, but if I had to predict, I would say that he's going to beat Chris Weidman again definitively. And then you've got Jacques Array, who can potentially fight and beat Luke Rockhold, but I don't think that that's going to happen. I think for the time being, you know, Luke Rockhold is on solid ground in the middleweight division, and that would beg the question as to whether or not he goes up, because you know that Luke Rockhold is a huge middleweight. He's probably 220, 230 before he cuts weight, so you know you can make a case for him fighting at the weight of 205 pounds. Now, another variable in the 205-pound division, and I don't want to say that it's totally or not that this is the middleweight division, is Vitor Belfort. You know, a lot of people have given Vitor Belfort flack for the steroids, and I understand that, but I think some of the criticism against him has been unfair, because steroids or PEDs cannot account for his ability, for him knocking Luke Rockhold out with a spinning heel kick and punches. Can him, you know, basically destroying his opponents. Now, if he comes back and he knocks out Jacques Array, then you know, you could see a rematch between the two. So there's a lot of potential fights in the middleweight division, but really, in the light heavyweight division, it's really all John Jones, and that's going to remain a constant as we go forward. So heading into this UFC fight night, which is taking place this Saturday, the main fight that intrigues me is this Anthony Johnson-Ryan Bader fight, which, again, I think has to go to Ryan Bader, who's looked well. He's put on a string of victories, I don't think he's really finished anybody really decisively. He had the win over Rashad Evans, who's getting towards the end of his career and is a little bit older. He had the victory over who else did he beat? Rashad Evans. I think he's beaten Henderson. He's beaten. He hasn't lost in a while, Ryan Bader. Yeah, even though Phil Davis. Yeah, he's getting, you know, predominantly decision wins, which a win is a win. There's no question about that. But you know, he's not really steamrolling guys. So we'll just have to see what happens. Now, another fight on this card that I'm looking forward to, just from a spectacle perspective, is the Josh Barnett Ben Rothwell fight. And Josh Barnett, of course, has been doing a lot of pro wrestling. Eddie Goldman just sent me an email about how the UFC is officially became the WWE. UFC is officially taking the pro wrestling angle now, and you see Josh Barnett training with a Lucha Libre mask on and whatnot. We had Josh Barnett on the show several years ago, and we really quizzed him in depth about Japanese pro wrestling and all the potential matchups and the potential finishes. And he loved those questions. I mean, Barnett really got a kick out of it. That's the route that the UFC has gone. I mean, you know, the UFC, and we talked about this the last time I was on the show. I talked about this when I was on Eddie's show. The last time, the state of MMA and how trash talk now is becoming very, very pivotal, and it's how ordinarily calm fighters and respectable fighters are marketing themselves. So look at someone like Dominic Cruz now, all of a sudden is trying to play the heel. It's no surprise. This is what the sport has really, really become. It's not really a surprise that Josh Barnett and others are doing this. And Josh Barnett has always done this. I mean, even when he was in Strikeforce, he had the type of pro wrestling shtick after he would win a match and whatnot. So that's not really, really surprising. But he's fighting a guy in Ben Rothwell. I don't know that there's any really implications in this fight. The heavyweight division is just completely unstable now. You've got Cain Velasquez now pulling out of UFC, was at 196, and now Stipe Miocic is stepping in for Cain Velasquez. They almost had to cancel that fight. Cain Velasquez saying that he has to get surgery for the nerve pain or his nerve condition, and his future is uncertain. He's been plagued with injuries before. So you've got him. He's going to be out for a long time. You've got Alistair Overeem, who is a free agent, and now Scott Coker and Bellator. They'd be wise to spend the money to get Alistair Overeem to bolster their heavyweight division. So that's putting a little bit more uncertainty in the heavyweight division. It's really, really unstable. There was some talk about Orlovsky returning to a title shot. He gets knocked out in 54 seconds by Stipe Miocic. So it's really, really all over the place, and it has been like that for a long time. But from a fan's perspective, it should be interesting to see these two guys fight. And as far as who I'm going to pick, I would have to pick Barnett, because I think Barnett has enough skills with his stand-up where he can get a takedown. He may be able to get a submission on Ben Rothwell. And I don't think Rothwell is going to be able to submit Barnett. I don't think Rothwell is going to be able to get him down. And I don't think he's going to be able to knock him out. So I think Josh Barnett is going to win this fight by submission, most likely. You'll see a rare submission in the UFC. And that's really, really the two main fights that I'm going to try to focus on. Although, I'm looking at my work schedule. I don't know if I'll be able to really see these fights, but hopefully see these. And hopefully I will be right. Hopefully I'll continue my not perfect streak when it comes to predicting fights, but 9 out of the fights that I predict on this program actually turn out to be the way I predicted them. Okay? Just keep that in mind if you're a betting man here. All right, so that's going to be it. I actually have a gym now. I'm so excited. I just joined Planet Fitness, and it's open like 24 hours a day. And they have circuit training. It's really, really great. So I could train there for a long time and then come home and go to sleep and then wake up tomorrow and continue my life as a wage slave in America. All right, that's it for this week's edition of Carson's Corner. Glad you could be with us. Big thanks to the folks from Street Beefs, Scarface, and the Iraqi Assassin. I want to thank the folks over at the Underground Forum for listening to us. I want to remind you, you could friend me on Facebook at facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. Make sure to like the Carson's Corner Facebook page at facebook.com/CarsonsCorner13. And if you're into radical politics and you want to support a real working class political movement, you'll tune in to my political show tomorrow from 9 to 11. It's Carson's Corner with the Election Boycott Advocates, my host. My co-host, Christopher Allen Driscoll, former media director for Ralph Nader's presidential runs, he's on. And it's about as radical of a leftist working class perspective as you'll get on the podcast airwaves, okay, on the podcast front. You're just not going to get it anywhere else. It's very, very important that you support the Election Boycott Advocates right here on Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com/Carson's Corner. Thank you very much, folks, and until next time, show some respect.